tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margin. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To be extent of this impeachment, if Parliament does not raise this money.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is a getting the macabre down. Compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obu at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
And a fantastic afternoon to everyone. Shaku Maku, we say. Well, and we begin with ideas with Ayobe. Thank you very much, Ayobe, for always being with us now and again.
Well, I'm an occasional person, but it's really great to be here, even if it's a bit sporadic.
Absolutely. And we have a great discussion. The Pandora Papers has captured the imaginations of everyone, including Nigerians. This work, which is done by the Global International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, will be the focus, we understand, on ideas this evening.
Yes, in fact, we are very lucky because we have Nicholas Ibekwe, the award-winning journalist, who is now the head of Premium Times Investigative Journalism Department. And he was directly involved in the examination of the Pandora Papers as part of the consortium. And so we're going to be discussing with him what are the ideas, issues that come that he raises.
Right. Excellent. And remember, you can always join the conversation at Nigeria Info FM on all our handles at Public Square and Ideas Radio NG.
Yes.
Ideas Radio NG. All social media platforms, you can always join the conversation. So Nicholas, I understand, is hello, Nicholas.
Hello.
Oh, excellent. So,
hi, Nicholas. Great.
Hi.
Yeah. All right, Ayo.
Yeah, I mean, Nicholas, I think that because we all talk about the Pandora Papers because I think we're news junkies, but not everybody may know what does the Pandora Papers really mean? What is it? How is it different from Paradise, Panama? So can you just give us a brief description of what the Pandora Papers are and the role that Premium Times and you played in their examination? You know, whether we had a lot of Nigerians in it and whether you've listed, given the names of all the Nigerians who were there, or whether there are, you just selected people, and if so, on what basis you selected?
Okay, Hello.
Hello. Can
you
hear me?
Yeah, I'm having a problem hearing you, Ayo. Yes, it seems you're distant. I mean, there seems to be some kind of gap between you and the microphone, so I can't hear you very clearly. I know you were asking, but from what I got, you were asking the difference between Pandora Papers and Panama Papers and Paradise Papers.
Well, merely a brief description of what the Pandora Papers are and the role that you played in examining them.
Okay, I mean, the Pandora Papers are basically, it's just an investigation that involves the secret, investment or people who are these assets in secret jurisdiction, mostly tax havens. So these tax havens are places where people don't get to pay enough tax, mostly island countries like the island of Jersey, Panama, there's Guernsey, Bahamas. They're mostly, those Caribbean countries. Interestingly, the U.S., a part of U.S. is also a tax haven like Delaware and some other places like that. So anywhere where the jurisdiction encourages secrecy and kind of help people to avoid paying their fair share of taxes, then generally those places are referred to as tax havens. So the Pandora paper basically is we have a leak from 14 of those offshore providers. We call the companies that makes it possible that, assist some of the world richest people, some of the world criminals, politicians, celebrities, and all of that to keep their money in these tax havens or in this secret jurisdiction. So we have a dump, we have a leak. So somebody gave us their files of 14 of those companies. So that is what the Pandora paper is. So what we have done here, and what other like 600 other journalists across the world did, was to they gave the leak to the ICID. The ICID is the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. So they formed this collaboration involving 600 journalists from across the world, 120 newsrooms. And what we did was to get into this file. We have almost 12 million files. Gosh. So you have to go there and search. They're doing a little Google search, and you're looking at document that has to do with people from your country. And,
okay, so can I just ask, so these Pandora Papers, it's not just about Nigeria, it's
no,
a global...
No, it's not. It's absolutely not about Nigeria. It cuts across all over the world, really. We've had reports about presidents, prime ministers from different countries and all of that. So, yeah, it's similar to the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers. Some years back now. But in this case, the difference between them is that it's in the scale. This is
huge. Hello? This is huge.
This is huge.
Yeah.
This is the biggest collaboration, investigative collaboration ever in the history of journalism, ever. So that is how huge it is, really.
Now, Nicholas, you will know that here in Nigeria, your media outlet, Premium Times, had been releasing stories on it. And predictably, Nigerians reacted to the scandal. But, we can see that actually the Pandora Papers have been quite ecumenical about where the hammer falls. It doesn't matter what region you come from, religion, political affiliation, gender. But do you think that in focusing on the scandal, the exposure of the rich and the famous, the political point scoring, the political finger pointing, do you think that we're missing something important about what the concept of the Pandora Papers and the secrecy and tax havens and so on that go on behind them? Are we missing something important about what it says about our democracy?
Yes, I really think that Nigerians are missing a lot. And it's sad and it's not even about the Pandora Papers itself. Generally, when regionalists or investigative journalists, release expose about politicians and all of that. You see people come in and defend their own civil rights politician or somebody from their own part of the country. So, if you ask me, I would tell you that Nigerians are not really, really serious about fighting corruption or seeing their politicians, stop, breaking the laws or stealing money and keeping them difficult to reach places or in secret jurisdiction. We are more concerned about who is this? Is this somebody that is somebody we like or somebody we don't like?
Yes.
You know. So if you don't like a person, then you will see the outrage from a section of Nigeria. But if you like this person and you begin to attack the journalists or attack the media house and say they are biased, they are being used for an agenda to attack somebody and all of that. So, we tend to expect that from Nigerians now, because this has been the kind of reaction we get for even apart from this Pandora Papers itself, even our local reporting and local investigative work that we do, this is what we get. So we're not surprised per se. Really. We really are not surprised. But as journalists, we have to keep doing our work. And our work is to shine a light on secret places and hold the powerful to account. And that is what we are doing. We are not policemen. We are not the judiciary or the Attorney General office that will prosecute anybody. Ours is just to put these exposés out in public and expect that the government agency responsible for prosecuting people or taking it from where what we have done, we'll take it from there. So that's, we just do our jobs, and that's what we are doing, really.
Well, you mentioned prosecution, but you know, in the reason why we call this program IDEAS, which stands for integrity, democracy, ethics, and accountability, is because very few of us like to accept the idea that our own behavior has been corrupt. But we try to emphasize these positive aspects so that if we now try to examine behavior, not necessarily because it's an outright crime. I mean, obviously, there are some cases where there clearly appears to have been public money stolen or filtered away in some way or the other. But even before we get to that stage, we look at the concept of having, tax havens, of being in public office, not paying tax. And is it enough for people who are in leadership positions to just hide behind the angry denunciations of their supporters or keep on saying, well, I haven't done anything wrong, I haven't done anything, I haven't broken any laws?
I mean, I really don't. What is it enforced is that, if I get your question right, the idea of tax haven itself is not particularly illegal.
Yeah.
You know, there are businessmen who would want, they call it tax planning. And they think that, I mean, for instance, if you're a Nigerian businessman, in the last 4 or 5 years or so, well, I mean, there have been a lot of uncertainty around our policies.
Mm-hmm.
Business people want to be sure, they want to keep their money in safe places where it won't, one man will not wake up one morning and just give an arbitrary policy and you are worth X billion one before you go to bed one night, and in the morning you are worth 50% less than that. So people want to keep their money where it is protected in one way or the other.
Yes,
you know, and all of that. They want to have that kind of safety net around their money. So it's not necessarily illegal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that for public officers, it could be problematic, because first, you're supposed, most of the stories we have done are for public officers who have refused to or who have failed to declare those assets. So you are required to declare your assets when you're running for public offices. Many of those people we have written stories about did not declare them. Many of them owns foreign bank accounts. Nigerian constitution says as soon as you get into public office, you should discontinue any foreign bank account you have. Many of them didn't declare them in there. Many of them are still directors. They're still running some of these trusts, some of these offshore companies, against what the constitution says. So those are some, in many cases, we didn't say anybody stole any money.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, apart from in one case, the governor in Northern Nigeria that has been in the news for quite a while. But in most of the cases, we're just saying these are constitutional requirements, and in fact, it's about transparency.
Yeah.
And people will say, oh, so where is this steal money? For most Nigerians, if you didn't steal money, then what was the offense? Did he steal any money? Is he not rich? Is he not a wealthy man before he became a politician? And that's not what we're saying. We're saying that there are laws. There's a reason why those laws were put in place in the first place.
Okay.
So if, for instance, we didn't have proof that nobody stole money, but that is not also saying that they did not steal money through those trusts, because what it means is that because they are secret, they make it very,
available
for somebody who wants to steal money to steal money.
It doesn't meet the integrity and ethics test.
And these are important. I mean, people don't like, we don't like to dismiss issues of integrity and ethics and say, oh, it's not a big deal, but it's a big deal. The reason why we have ethics is the reason why we have laws, and we expect that public office holders should respect those laws.
Well, before we close, Nicholas, as I said, this is a very short discussion, and I'm surprised at how quickly the time has gone. But you remember that in the Greek myth of Pandora, the first woman, according to the Greeks, she opened the box and all manner of evils flew out, and she quickly tried to close it. But then it happened that she had left one thing inside the box, and so she had to open it. And that thing that she had left inside the box that now was able to come out was hope. Is there anything that we should hope for out of this? Are we learning something about the idea that we shouldn't just immediately rush to defend somebody because we like them? Is there any hope for us and our democracy out of these Pandora Papers?
Yeah, because I think there's a lot we can learn. You know, because you don't know these people. I mean, a politician, if you're not a member of his immediate family, you cannot vouch for the person. You don't know what what deal that person has gone into. You don't know where he has kept his money and everything. I think most Nigerians, in trying to hold their politician to account, should always leave that space and say, I don't know so much about this person. And what are the evidence? What does the evidence say? I mean, look at it from that angle and say, I mean, don't just rush and say, oh, I know he's a clean person, he cannot steal your money. So because we have this box, that's why even though from the Pandora box and we have this secrecy that they thought would not come to light. The thoughts are safe in those. I mean, so you see these tax havens, the offshore jurisdiction as the proverbial Pandora box. But now we have somebody has gone in and applied that box open, and we have this information, and we have all this kind of flying all over the place. But we expect the Nigerian government to actually step in. I mean, as a journalist, I want to see my story have impact. So I expect the Nigerian government, the Office of the Attorney General, to step in now and start putting cases together. Some of those people that we have mentioned, that we have written story about, that have broken the law, they should be prosecuted. And that this is what we are seeing in other parts of the world. And ours should not be different, really.
I want to thank you so much, Nicholas, for sparing some time to talk to us and really shed a bit of light on the ideas, issues that are raised by the Pandora's Papers. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, that was something. Nicholas Ibekwe with Premium Times and the ICIJ and the way they had carried out the investigation. I do hope we can learn something from this, and like I you say, the hope that comes out from the Pandora box, and it wouldn't be like the others we've seen, you know.
Just that we get hardened to it and we stop thinking that there's anything special about, or we just go into that mode of thinking that they're all the same, and we don't bother to make the effort to find out the different one and vote for that person in our elections.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Ayo. You'll be here again next week.
I'm more of a fortnightly yes, visitor.
Absolutely. So Ayo's back again in a fortnight, and we'll get to hear something really important and big for us on the public square. Thank you very much, Ayo.
Thanks so much, Ayo.
All right. Have a fantastic weekend.
Wish you the same.
All right, we'll be back, and today's International Day, the fight against poverty. We will be back with that one. We have discussions coming with Ruth B. Still and an economist, Paul Olaje. Please stay with us on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
We do.
You know, the youth of Nigeria have historically been apathetic towards the electoral process. There's no way for the youth to participate in mainstream fields like oil and gas, banking, and so on. The youth are actively excluded from those fields. And so we just created our own way in tech.
Informed analysis. Reliable. Accurate.
We actually advocate you get your eyes checked at least once a year. When you go for an eye check, the routine things they check, they do for you is to check your visual acuity. Visual acuity is how good you see. A lot of us don't actually know that we don't see so well. But because, like I said earlier, we can count money, we think we're doing very well.
Your number one station for talk, 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is The Public Square.
We'll be right back.
Farid, welcome back. And while we wait to get connected to Paul Alaje, economist, on this International Day to End Poverty, which is actually on the 18th. So we are 2 days, on the 17th, which is 2 days away from now. And we will talk about what exactly it means for us as a people. There's a focus of Public Square today. The theme for this year's event is Building Forward Together, Ending Persistent Poverty, and Respecting All People and Our Planet. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic gripped the world during the past year has resulted in reversing decades of progress in the fight against poverty and extreme poverty. And according to the World Bank, between 88 and 115 million people have been pushed into poverty as a result of the crisis, with the majority of the new extreme poor being found in South Asia and sub-Saharan countries where poverty rates are already high. This year alone, the number is expected to have risen between 143 and 163 million. This new poor will join the ranks of the 1.3 billion people already living in multidimensional and persistent poverty, and who saw their pre-existing deprivations aggravated during the global pandemic. And as a matter of fact, the measures imposed to remove the spread of the pandemic, which is a COVID-19, often further pushed them into poverty. The informal economy, which enables many people in poverty to survive, was virtually shut down. Many countries. Let's see if we've got Paul Alaje join the discussion. Public Square. Right, looks like we don't have Paul yet, but all right, once we get Paul Alaje in, we can quickly see and talk some more. Otherwise, we have a great show planned out for you. Remember, you can join Public Square on all our social media platforms at Nigeria Info FM, at Public Square NG, and at Obo at Rotimi Sankori. Don't forget, there's the books Nigeria at 61. So five went out last week. Not all of them have picked up their books. I see that Alex says she's out of town. She will pick up hers when she's available. Someone came in. Unfortunately, we didn't have the book there available for him to pick up. So please, I think it was Godwin, find your way back. But there'll be five others who will join the five from last week. But let's go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the International Day to Eliminate Poverty. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
99.3 Nigeria Info.
Your number one station for talk. Let's talk.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
All right, welcome back to the Public Square on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm Awogo Obo, and together with Rotimi Sankore, we looking at a big day. Well, the day is for Sunday, which is the 17th of October. It's the day to mark the elimination of poverty. It's the United Nations observance, and we're doing this 48 hours earlier. And at the top of the hour, after the headline news, Rotimi will be joining in. And unfortunately, our guest, is caught up in commuting from the airport to where he can speak with us. But what we're going to do, and by the way, tomorrow is a big day for us also too. It's a 10th year anniversary Super Saturday. We've got two events lined up, a security summit, as well as the Gen Z Summit also too. And both events are already booked out. So if you're going to register now, you're already late. And remember, it's a first come, first serve. So if you get there early, you can get entry. But otherwise, it will be a fantastic show. All of us are going to be there tomorrow, letting you join in the big conversations. So, the International Day to End Poverty, and Nigeria features gravely, unfortunately, in this whole discussion, Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics tells us at least 83 million, closing on 90 million people, live below the country's poverty line. And it defined the poverty line at 137,430 naira every year. So if you do the math, it comes up to about 11,000 naira. The people who are living below the poverty line are earning. It's a wide array of indicators or parameters which they arrived at this one, and just to measure poverty, and it's a wide range of socioeconomic indicators. Many of those socioeconomic indicators, Rotimi and I will be exploring at the top of the hour, things like housing, food, health, transportation. Many of these things, the general well-being, living standards, things which have been used in estimating poverty. And many people have been pushed into extreme poverty in the last year because of the COVID-19, not directly because of the deaths that have happened, but because people were out of work and people lost their jobs and people have been forced to work shorter hours. So all of this has impacted on their cost on their livelihoods, affected their standard of living also too. So for the next couple of minutes, I think I can take in two or three calls. I want to hear from you how the poverty discussion is affecting you. If you think about how much you earn, I would like to know how much of that money goes into food, for example, how much goes into transportation. I know that and then healthcare. Most of us pay our monies for our rent on a yearly basis. So it will be difficult for us to estimate how much you're spending or out of your income on housing, because you're paying bulk 1 year. So we'll do for food and we'll do for housing. No, we'll do for food, we'll do for transportation and health. As a percentage of what you earn a month, I would love to know how much you're spending on food. So just some sort of random survey I'm going to be doing very quickly before we go on the next break. So we'll do it in 1 minute. Hello and good evening. Sorry about that. Please do call back. On WhatsApp, the number is 08095975805. Again, 08095975805 is the number to send me messages on WhatsApp. To call is 0700-993-993-993. Again, 0700-993-993-993. If you're female, you want to join the conversation and tell us, as a fraction of what you earn every month is going in for food, for health, and for transportation, you can call the number 01465-7190. Again, 01465-7190, female only. Hello and good evening. Hello and good evening. All right, you're not in there. Hello and good evening. I don't have anyone there too. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
This is Oge, calling from Ikeja.
Oge from Ikeja. Yes. Excellent. So we're doing this test. How much you're probably earning? You don't have to tell us, but you can tell us in terms of fraction of how much goes into transportation.
I can say, I earn less than 150,000.
A month?
Yes, a month. I have a kid and I stay in the family house. Somehow it makes it easier in a way.
Good.
But now, the money we spend for feeding,
right,
is, in fact, okay, feeding is different than transportation. Again, is another different thing again.
Good.
With that same salary, I also pay school fees with that same amount of money.
Education.
So at the end of the day, you really do not have enough to even save or to even say you want to buy something for yourself. So basically, you're only spending for feeding and than the children, than the child's school fees.
Yes. So will you say, okay, will you say in terms of percentages, you're spending the most on feeding and transportation?
I spend the most on transport and feeding.
Let's say out of the 150,000 naira, you're spending more than half. Am I correct?
More than half.
Ooh.
More than half of feeding, because when you buy, I buy a half bag of rice, and I buy other condiments to go for it, like vegetable oil, and I have very expensive. So if we're buying 5 liters on the normal vegetable oil, that goes for 5,000 naira. Not the other one, the foreign ones, or the other brands that we know.
Right.
The other ones that you just see the filling, the 5 liters that does not have label, that one is 5K.
Wow.
See? And they want us to go and buy the ones that are very good. And that one goes for like 7,000. You see? So that is why all these things affect the health of individuals. Not that many people do not know what they are supposed to buy.
Right, right.
But because you have to go for the ones that you think that are, at least let the tummy be filled.
Absolutely.
Okay, then later we'll start talking about, okay, are you
and you've got one child.
You said?
You have a child.
Yes, I have a child.
Okay.
So my child, I also need to try my best to find a better one for her to eat. Then we can go for any other thing.
All right. Thank you.
You see, it is actually not easy.
All right. All right, okay. Thank you very much. And then you get, for being the first one to call in, you get Nigeria at 61 by Chido Onuma. You can pick it up in our offices, our office at Etimi Yang next week. But just send us your number again. I don't think the call handler has your number, so that we can have your details. Send me a message on... Okay, they have your number now, so they'll help us with it. Thank you very much, Oge, again. 150,000 naira, Oge says, and that goes into majorly feeding and transportation. So let's do this. I can squeeze in one more call. Hello and good evening. Sorry about that. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
All right. Kindly move away from the device you're listening with so that we don't get the feedback.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. Great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where you're calling
from. First time caller to your program.
Delighted to have you join us. What's your name, please?
My name is Favour Olagbemiro. I'm a first time caller to your program.
All right. Welcome to Public Square. Welcome to Nigeria Info also too, Favour. So quickly, Favour,
God bless you.
How much you earn and how much of that goes into feeding and transportation?
Well, I earn a little below 80,000. And after all the additions and subtractions and cutting some costs, at least 45,000 goes into feeding.
Wow.
We want to talk about transport and
The easier question to ask is how much is left at the end of the month for you?
More or less, nothing is left to... Let's all just survive.
Wow.
Let us just keep looking on to God.
80,000, 45,000 goes just on feeding.
Yes, just not even that you're eating the adequate thing.
Right. Just to go through.
Like the other lady said, just to fill the stomach.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much, Favour. And Favour will get our second Nigeria 61 series by Chido Onuma. And something for us to think about from two callers, and then I'm sure the rest of you who will call in after we've had Rotimi come in at the top of the hour. So we're going to go on a quick break. When we come back, Public Square will resume. Please stay with us on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Let me tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet at the edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margins. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this man, if Parliament does not rise this morning.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is getting the macabre. Compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
All right, welcome back to the public square on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm Awogo Obo, and from now till 5 minutes to the top of the hour, we have discussions, you and I, on this day to end international, to end eliminate poverty. It's supposed to be marked on the 17th of October every year, but we're doing this earlier because we're here today. And interesting samples we've been taking. Ruth Misankore joins in straight away, data and development expert, as well as host Public Square. And Ruth, interesting discussion we had first with IOB, and then the sampling of people on WhatsApp. I have so many people sending messages about how much they earn. And interestingly, there's something common. They're all spending nearly three quarter of their earnings on food majorly and transportation. The latest one dropping on my timeline here is Basile. He says, my salary is 40,000 naira a month. I spend 25,000 naira on food, 10,000 naira on transport. I hardly buy clothes. I use the last 5,000 for other logistics. Love your show. Thank you very much, too. Rotimi.
Yeah.
Great. We're back.
Yeah. So I think, in fact, not I think.
Yeah.
The official measurements of poverty in Nigeria is flawed.
Mm.
Very much flawed.
Mm.
I mean, how can something that is equivalent to less than 12,000 naira a month be the official measurement for poverty?
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there are people that earn 150,000 and are living in poverty.
Mm.
So, in other words, the official measurement of poverty is like 10% of what it should be.
So true.
And that means that if you expand it accordingly, you will find that many more people, perhaps almost the entire country, with the possible exception of those that have access to state resources, you know, and those in extremely high-end jobs, you know. So, I mean, let's just for example now. So, if you earn, say, 100 to 120,000 a month, which is about 10 times what the official measurement of poverty is, what is that going to do for you? And that is why globally, people now talk about multidimensional poverty.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just what you have in your pockets or what you take home that is the cause of the poverty. There are a lot of other things that influence poverty. So, for instance, access to education impacts on poverty. Access to health impacts on poverty. Access to affordable and quality transport impacts on poverty. So does housing. So does food and nutrition. And so forth like that. Now, those things in developed countries are not dependent on your income. Income poverty is a different classification entirely. It's a completely, so I mean, just to summarize before we commence detailed discussion. So in developed countries, there are certain categories of people, for instance, that are removed from transport-related poverty. So for instance, in most of Europe, if you are a school child, that means you are under 16. You have access to bus, train, you have access to public transport for free.
For free, right, very true.
So if you are 16 and under, for instance, and you are in the United Kingdom, you are a school child, you have a free bus pass or a free transport pass. If you are a pensioner, when you get to pension age, you also get a letter from the transport service, well, from the state, the section responsible for transport, and then you get a free transport pass. So in other words, if you're of an age where you are not earning income, under 16, or over retirement age, you get free public transport. And that is a key determinant of poverty. How much you have to spend on public transport. There are countries where you pay half price or a quarter price, or it is only free within certain areas, like within your school area, for instance. So if it is determined that you are going to school, say within 10 kilometers of where you reside, then the transport is free, but maybe on weekends you pay. But there are countries where it is blanket. It's blanket. If you're under 16, the bus and train is free for you. So that's one way in which the transport-related poverty is affected. For the health, in most European countries, your basic health care is free, regardless of age. It's free. And we know that out-of-pocket expenses is one of the biggest causes of bankruptcy in developing countries. Absolutely. Out-of-pocket expenses for health.
Absolutely. And in fact, all the Bureau of Statistics in Nigeria showed us during the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of people in places where they don't have enough doctors in this country, they spend more than even places in Lagos and other southwestern
states. The simple fact of it is that people die of things that are easily preventable or treatable because they cannot even afford the registration money, the fee for the doctor.
Yes, 2,000 naira. Think about that guy who had 40,000 naira. He has only 5,000 naira left, you know, he says at the end of the month.
Yeah.
If he gets ill, he's in problem.
Look, if you have anything beyond malaria, you are done for. And even that malaria medicine, some people cannot afford it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just one example. I mean, it's a clear case of underdevelopment where for routine surgery, you take a picture of people in their bed and post it on social media and say, so-so person needs 100,000 naira. I mean, I keep on telling people that even you and I, the day we need one kind of complicated surgery, maybe heart surgery or something like that, people should not be surprised to see us on social media saying, that guy on radio needs heart surgery. Please contribute, you know, your widow's mite. I mean, that is really how bad it is. Because some people don't even have anything to contribute towards a health provider. And the state-run services certainly cannot do those things. So, you know, people die of basic things like appendix. Like appendix. Because if you go to any, say you want to do appendix and they say 100,000, where is the average person going to get it? So that's why, you know, Agbojedi and all kinds of things that they sell at bus stop as cure-all in, you know, in Molu and so forth like that.
Yeah.
That's why all those things are really, you know, that's the, you know, the... Look, anytime I see any of those things, you know, I just really get sad. So if you go to any developed country except the U.S., except that point has to be made, because when Obama was trying to introduce the Affordable Care Act, he made it clear that the U.S. is the only industrially advanced country in the world where basic health care is not free. And that it was a big shame. I mean, they call it Obamacare. You know, I mean, I was up all night with thousands of people all over the world watching the count in Congress. And it passed. The Republicans have been trying to take it down ever since then. Why? Because the big business people that own the hospital chains in America make tremendous amount of money from poor people. In fact, if you're on basic health insurance in the U.S. and you go to claim, you fill a form that is like 50 pages where if anybody in your family has had a has suffered from that thing before, they take it as pre-existing condition and say that you can't claim on it. That's what Obamacare took off. So with the exception of U.S., you know, almost every other developed country offers free health care at point of delivery. Obamacare offers it now, but still to a limited number of people because Republicans will not allow them to expand it to make it universal. But aside from that, this is a, you know, it's a big case of bankruptcy in underdeveloped country. So we've talked of transport.
Yeah, transport.
We've talked of health. Education.
Right.
In most developed countries, the education is free, primary and secondary, and compulsory.
Right.
Here, the state system is so bad that a lot of people turn to what they call private. I mean, just go to any Mushin, Agege, Surulere, and so forth. You will see people converting two rooms and calling it Montessori International School. Because the state, I mean, they've been to the state-run school, and they've seen 70 students per class. With a poorly equipped teacher. So, I mean, by the way, the NUT, they complained that there are tens of thousands of teachers short. And when you convert that number of teachers into students, the global recommended class size is 20 or 25 children per class. When you convert the number of teachers that NUT said that they are short of, that gives you about 14 million children. Then you add that to the out-of-school official figure, and you see how bad that problem is. So education, and the reason why education is crucial is this, because what it ought to be is that education is the step that allows subsequent generations to step up on, you know, in terms of standard of living. So in any society that is developing, every subsequent generation should be better than the previous one. Here in Nigeria, every subsequent generation is worse than the previous one. So education is clearly a problem. Food and nutrition. Everybody talks about onions, tomato, pepper, you know, how the inflation hits it and so forth. Oh, housing, I mean, that's just a complete disaster. And by the way, on the transport, if rain falls for Lagos, if, you know, if it was 100 naira going to work, on the way back, it could suddenly be 300.
Right.
It's unpredictable. You know, so the lack of infrastructure imposes poverty on people. This lack of train, lack of mass transit in most of our cities, it's a problem.
Right. You can't, you cannot have this sort of numbers of people living in an urban center and not have a train service that takes...
Yes, I mean, even the way the city is planned, the way the city is planned itself can impose poverty. So let's just give an example. In most developed countries, every borough or local government makes provision for those providing public services to live within a borough or local government. So, for instance, in Ikoyi or Victoria Land or Lekki, there will be housing for teachers.
Right.
There will be housing for nurses. There will be housing for fire service.
Right.
There will be housing, you know, so that if you teach or you are a nurse in a hospital there, or your fire service or whatever, you will live close to the area where you provide the service. It's a way of mitigating poverty so that you don't have to wake up at 4 in the morning and travel for 3 or 4 hours to get to work and pay through your nose for it. So the way cities are planned mitigates poverty. And I can bet you here that there is no teacher, no pano, no, you know, nurse or whatever that can afford to live in Ikoyi or VI. Unless they are living in BQ. So if you work in those places, you travel from very far. So even urban planning is a contributor to poverty. So the long and short of it is that when you look at the number of Nigerians living in multidimensional poverty, you know, the MPS, using this miscalculation that you mentioned,
111,000 a month.
You know, using that miscalculation, puts it at just under 100,000. Whereas people actually, you know, I'm sorry, put it at just under 100 million.
Right.
with that miscalculation, say people in poverty are just under 100 million.
Yeah.
Whereas, actually, if you are earning 100,000 in Nigeria, you are in poverty. So if you are earning 10 times the official calculation, you are in poverty, which really will bring the real poverty count closer to about 180 or 190 million.
Mm.
So which country can absorb that weight? When we talk of 60 million people that are unable to read or write,
right,
by the count of the Federal Minister of Education,
right,
that is a weight of poverty.
Absolutely.
Because their income is limited.
Right. So you know,
they are just certain things they cannot do.
Yes. You know, Rotimi, this multidimensional index in measuring poverty helps us understand better what poverty is beyond just the way they say minimum wage, which doesn't make any sense. It's more
friends
in budget even did do a simple survey and found that this was even before the inflation began to head north, that you would require at least for a family of four, 110,000 naira a month to be able to just scrape through, rather than the 30,000 naira.
Oh, I'm telling you that even that calculation is off. 110,000 for a family of four.
Yeah, this was before. This was way before the. I was about 2 years ago. But what to be there? Consequences for the indicators.
So see, all these things we mentioned.
Mm.
You know, the free transport for school children and free transport for pensioners. Access to free access to health at point of delivery. Welfare net, you know, diet, nutrition, all those things in addition to the take-home pay, if you add it in terms of pay, it should be coming to about 350 to 400,000 minimum wage a month. The reason why in developed countries they provide those things is because they know that the take-home pay cannot provide those things. So that welfare, that safety net,
right,
for the different demographics in society is designed to mitigate the poverty. So when our president, and he has even tried to mention it, many state governors do not even mention raising anybody out of poverty. But let's look at what our president said. He said in the two speeches he has made recently that they aim to take an average of 10 million people a year out of poverty, 100 million over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So at least the president is aware of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of action taken, it amounts to null. Why? Because at present, just under 8 million people are born a year.
Yeah.
So
10 million
and in
is,
about 2 or 3 years, that it will raise to about 9 million. And in 2 or 3 years after that, it will be 11 million born a year.
Yeah.
So in the 10 years, they plan to take 100 out of poverty.
More
another 100 million would have been born. Never mind that even the steps they want to use people out of poverty, trader money, farmer money, empower, those things make no difference. 5K, 10K.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Hello, Rotimi, you're still there?
Yes. I finished making the point that
make 5K or 10K
for trader money, farmer money, and those things don't make a difference. The things that make a difference are the things we talked about earlier.
Right.
Education.
Right.
I mean, if people's children have access to education,
right,
free quality,
right,
it reduces that. If the kids going to school are going in free transport and back, it reduces that. If the kids have a solid meal at school, it reduces that. If the health care for everybody is free at point of delivery, it's, you know, and by the way, the big people in government understand this thing very clearly because on top of their big salary, they live in free house and get free car and get free health and get free power, electricity.
Yeah. Just look at the national...
So they understand the multidimensional poverty for themselves.
Yes, I mean, you remember, Rotimi, it took them so long to relocate to Obasanjo was president, and then many of the lawmakers refused to stay in Akpo legislative quarters until it was completed, and then they had to get paid for wardrobe allowance, for furniture allowance, before they agreed to
The 1,004 in Lagos was built for people in the parliament now.
Yes.
when exactly. the old National Assembly was behind TBS.
Very true.
You know, and as I've often said, as a child of a senior civil servant that lived in Ikoyi and I grew up in Ikoyi, I know this from experience that all the senior civil servants had free accommodation and free transport and free fuel. Yeah. And my friends who were the, you know, the children of my dad's driver and so on and so forth like that, I mean, they lived in the BQ until, you know, their dad had 9 children and they had to move to Morocco. And they were living in a shanty, shanty made up of aluminium roof, cardboard, and wood, with no toilet, no water, nothing. So the higher you go, the more you know how to resolve the multidimensional poverty for yourself. Meanwhile, the people earning less don't get any of those things. And it is people earning less that need the support with the housing, with the transport, with the healthcare. Instead, in Nigeria, it is the higher you are, the more you get those things for free. So it doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make any sense. We're going to go on a quick break, Rotimi. Well, no, not really quick, but we hope that when we come back, we can make use of the little time we have left. Still some things to talk about, to hear from you also, too. We still want to know how this multidimensional poverty is hitting hard at the people in the country, and what can we do? What are the low-hanging fruits? And what areas can we explore? Remember, there's still the Nigerians at 61 are giving out 2. We still have 3 to go. So altogether, we've given out 7 of the Nigeria at 61 series books. Don't forget, you come pick it up in our office next week. And let's see where it takes us to. Let's go on that quick break. When we come back, we can talk some more on Public Square.
99.3 Nigeria Info, your number one station for talk. Let's talk. This is The Public Square.
All right, welcome back to The Public Square on 99.3 Nigeria Info. And we're going to make a quick dash for the finish line here. But Rotimi, we're still here, and that was a long one, but we have to pay the bills. Rotimi, are you still there?
Yeah. Good. All right. I'm excellent. Just reflecting on what you were what you were saying. Look, some of the ads, I mean, sorry to say, also reflect the level of poverty in the country, because, I mean, if somebody is building a new city somewhere and in an overcrowded state, really has to be begging people to come to the place. I mean, it shows the level of poverty.
Okay.
I mean, you see people advertising this estate, that estate.
Yeah.
And they tell you, oh, in fact, the thing is going at such a cheap price of, you know, 10 million down payment and 24 monthly, very low 24-month installments of the remaining 24 million, and it is yours immediately. And you are wondering, is it these people that the official measurement of poverty is 10,000 naira a month?
When is he ever going to finish paying? For a recipe?
No. I mean, it's just not going to happen in Nigeria.
All right.
I mean, there are just a lot of things that are not understood or taken seriously by the policymakers at federal, state, and local government level. The previous week, we were talking about International Day of the Girl Child.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody remembered that we did underline that 2/3 of those living in poverty live in households where no girl has accomplished 6 years of education. So, I mean, there is no doubt that a lot of the poverty is tied to gender. And when the states do not make it clear that not only is primary and secondary school compulsory for girls, but that anything that obstructs their education and empowerment is not to be tolerated, such as forced child marriage, using girls for housemaid and things like, you know, look, the state does not back up its intention, its stated policy intentions with budget or policy. And that's the thing, you know. Presidents and governors, you know, read press statements and expect us to take it as policy. They make speeches and expect us to take it as policy. They don't go to the National Assembly or the House of Assembly and back it up with resources or policy that makes it clear. And that is why on the reverse side of it, you also see them repressing rights with just statement. Somebody just wake up and just make an announcement that people cannot make Twitter, just with mouth, no law, nothing backing it up, and threatening that if you do it, you will see. I mean, you know, so, you know, you know, look, on the one hand, you look at the budget.
Yes.
It is a speech. The budget is supposed to be the statement of your priorities, where the your national, state, or local government investment is going to go. So the president even makes speeches that we can critique. How many state governors have put out a detailed speech that we can look at? Local governments, who call, I mean, those ones are just disappeared from the horizon completely in terms of budgeting, but they have resources. And it's not clear what they are budgeting it on or what their priority is. So you see more developed countries, people pay attention to budget on three levels, local, state, regional, and national. And they combine the resources from top to bottom, as you always say. They combine it. So the federal education budget is aligned with the state and the local government to ensure that those going to nursery school can transit to primary, can transit to secondary, can transit to... I mean, education is a key indicator of poverty. Absolutely. And when you have a scenario in which 70% of those that are primary school cannot transit to secondary school, you can see, you know, where the poverty is coming from. And so many more girls cannot even start, talk less of transiting. Look, our, you know, cooking with charcoal, wood, or dung is a sign that you are in poverty.
Absolutely.
So just look across the country and you see undernourishment, malnutrition is an indicator of poverty. You know, and you can just go on and look. If you buy pure water, you are in worse than multidimensional poverty. Because if you are spending 50 or 100 naira a day on pure water times 30 days, the minimum wage is supposed to be what, Ahol?
30,000 naira.
30,000. If you spend 1,000 naira a day on water, what is that?
That's 30,000 naira.
I mean, you are in worse than multidimensional poverty.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, the indicators are so much and so clear that when a federal, state, and just forget local government for now, suggest that they are going to lead people out of poverty, and all these things are not in place. Energy poverty is real. In a country that has 95% power deficit, we are supposed to be at 200,000 megawatts. We are at 5,000. The global sustainable development for lifting people out of energy poverty is 1,000 megawatts per million people. We should be at 200,000 plus. We are at 5,000. So the energy poverty is real, and that means people are turning to fuel. I better pass my to, you know, to just to power themselves. So I'm waiting for this imaginary day when the, you know, fuel subsidy will be removed and just cement, you know, the multidimensional poverty of the entire country. Because everybody runs generator.
Everybody.
So look, if you have to spend up to 10,000 naira a day on your generator, when the so-called subsidy has gone, that's 300,000 a month. And if this happens before election, can any such party really win an election? They keep saying, "Oh, the refinery will be fixed; it will be refurbished." Meanwhile, the bulk of the money goes in importing petrol. Why? The bulk of the money goes on importing gas. And meanwhile, the president says the economy will diversify from petrol to gas.
Absolutely. I mean,
and we are still importing the gas and then flaring the one we have.
Hmm.
So, I mean, you can see, you know, the dimensions and the cost of the poverty are so vast
right.
that, you know, just to try and address it, you need a national summit or colloquium
right.
where stakeholders, federal government, several ministries, states, local, will be pulled together to say, listen, this is your role in this thing. And unless all of you fix your individual role and then come up with a collective plan and we can see a pathway
right.
through it where we can see real changes within 2 to 3 years, the country is going to sink and collapse.
Mm. All right, Rotimi. So we have very little time left, but we still have unfinished business. We have the lines to get to. And in the spirit of fairness, for those who will still get the Nigeria at 61, Nigeria at 60 series by Chido Onuma, I have two on WhatsApp. So I've taken two already, Favor and Oge, on the phone lines, who will join the five from last week. I've taken two from WhatsApp. I see Basil. Basil sent in the earlier message of earning 40,000 naira and then 25,000 naira on food, 10,000 naira on transport. I got your message on WhatsApp, so you get one book for your troubles. This one, Margaret in Orile, she says, good day. Sirs, I earn less than 60,000 naira. I spend 30,000 naira on feeding. My daughter is in the university. I send 20,000 naira to her. Then I manage 10K for transport and beg the rest from any friends. Margaret from Orile. So your troubles, you get one Nigeria at 60 also too. So real life stories wrote to me, we're getting here
from
people.
Sorry, Al, can we just a slight correction?
Right.
There are 60 authors in the Nigeria at 60 and it is edited by Chido Onuma.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. So there are 60 authors from different fields of life.
Yes.
Different demographics. Different ages, but mostly young by Nigerian standards.
and it's an interesting read. I'm still going through it, different authors and what they think about the content. Talking about summits, which is going to be at Four Point Sheraton tomorrow. By Sheraton tomorrow for the security summit together with three other interesting, wonderful speakers. So, Rotimi, I think we're taking one call and then we call it a wrap. That
yes,
one
yes,
call,
it's at your discretion.
Yes, that one call will be for the last person, Nigeria 6 together, with your contribution. Who will you be? Hello and good evening. Hello and good evening. Okay, sorry, not true. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
My name is Tunde, calling from Itire.
Say that again, Tunji or Tunde?
Tunde, calling from Itire.
All right, Tunde from Itire. Great to have you join us. Very quickly, in a minute.
Thank you for your statement you have been raising. We thank you because that is why you are a maestro. You see, what is going on in this country? I don't know how do I say it. Because that is why we need you people that we can encourage us, that can make something good to our fellow Nigerians so that you can encourage us. That is what I want to say, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, Tunde, for your comments. And Tunde will get the last one for Nigeria at 60 from Itire. Thank you very much, Tunde. So, Rotimi, I think we can do the wrap now as we bring today's show, unfortunately, to a close. So many messages, and thank you very much. By the way, this is on podcast now. Go to Nigeria Info website, look for Public Square at the top. You get all of the episodes, including this episode you can listen to again. So, Rotimi.
Yeah, well, all I can say is join us again next Friday, 4 p.m. We hope to have a special series on electricity and education from next Friday. It's not all sorted, but if it is done by then, we hope to provide you some great insights into the power and education sectors. What is wrong? What should be done? The role those sectors play in improving standard of living and industrialization. So, 4 p.m. next Friday, 99.3.
All right, 4 p.m. And we'll be also live at the Security Summit tomorrow, as well as the GX show tomorrow, GX Summit tomorrow also, too. Look forward to seeing every one of you. We're going to have the news at the top of the hour, and after that, Sam and Ifa will be in for music and moments. Bye-bye, everyone.